We're doing a special class in our Judaism 101, a class about how to choose a rabbi. And I'd like to dedicate this class to the speedy recovery of Shira Ruchama Bat Zion Bat Ahuva. She should have a refuah shleima, speedy recovery. We should all hear good news quickly, and our learning is dedicated to her refuah. Choosing a rabbi can be one of the most important decisions of your life. If you're going to have a rabbi, which you're going to make decisions with, and you're going to ask him halachic questions, so it can greatly influence the course your life takes. Some people have a closer relationship with their rabbi, some people have a more distant relationship with their rabbi. Chazal told us, "Aseh v'charav," one should try to make for themselves a rebbe. And the Rambam explains, even if you don't find someone of the highest stature, even if you only have someone who's a little bit more knowledgeable than you, if you can have him as your rabbi, you have gained something. Our sages tell us the mere fact that a person lives in close proximity to his rabbi will ensure that he doesn't sin certain sins. Shlomo had his rebbe, and ultimately Shlomo executed his rebbe. Shlomo the king, the wisest of men, had a rebbe who taught him, and eventually this rebbe deserved the death penalty, and he was executed by the king, by Shlomo. But so long as that rebbe was alive, Shlomo didn't sin in marrying the daughter of Pharaoh. He didn't marry her. There was a girl who he was not supposed to marry, the daughter of Pharaoh, an Egyptian woman. And after his rebbe passed away, after he executed his rebbe, because he was legally correct in executing his rebbe, but the mere fact that this rebbe, who he had the power of life and death over this rebbe, but the fact that this rebbe lived near him, caused Shlomo to behave differently. And when this rebbe, Shimi ben Gera, was out of the picture, Shlomo went downhill. So even a wise man like Shlomo, even a wise and powerful man like Shlomo, who had the power to execute his rebbe, the mere fact that he was living near his rebbe caused him to be a better person. So it is to one's benefit to find the rebbe. Our discussion tonight is going to revolve around how do we find the rebbe, how do we choose the rebbe, and we're going to try to deal with it on many levels, halachic, hashkafic, and practical, with a major stress on practical. Halachic and hashkafic we've discussed many times before. We have different classes on the web. Tonight our class is focused more directly to the building of a Jewish home, because this is what our class revolves around, and because we have so many chatanim, and we're at the end of our semester, people are about to spring forward, so I think it's far more relevant with the question of building one's life, building one's home, the question of how do we choose a rabbi. Now, I don't think we have to go into the discussion of the fact that your rabbi should be orthodox, should be knowledgeable in halacha. I also would like to skip over the discussion of do I choose a Haredi or the Tilumi rabbi. We'll touch on it in the end, simply because I didn't notice that concerns anyone that's present. So for the sake of time, I think we will skip over it unless there's someone who wants us to deal with it. We had other classes that discussed how do you choose a direction in life, which will ultimately define who your rabbi is. But is there anyone that wants us to cover that aspect of the topic? Yes? You could say yes. Yes? Sometimes people ask, well, if I choose a Dati Lumi rabbi, he'll answer me in one way regarding Yom HaTzmut, Tzava, Medina. And if I choose a Haredi rabbi, he'll answer me a different way. So if that question concerns you, we'll try to cover that tonight as well. I assume that most people here were present when we covered that topic. Do you want us to cover that as well? Yes, or it's not necessary? Okay, so we'll try to get to that as well. Okay. So we'll start with who's in the picture. Who am I choosing from? Which will cover that aspect as well. We know that we have tradition. When we got the Torah at Sinai, so we got the Torah, the written law, together with the oral law, and we have a tradition as to how we rule within halacha. Within the realm of orthodoxy, we work within that tradition. conservative and reform have broken from that tradition. They've decided that they're going to empower their rabbis to do things that our tradition has it that rabbis cannot do. Our tradition is we must fulfill every mitzvah in the Torah, and we cannot compromise on that. Conservative and reform have decided that they do not have to fulfill every mitzvah in the Torah, and their rabbis can decide which mitzvahs they do and do not keep. So I don't see a need to go into that aspect of the discussion. I'm assuming that our choice is within the Orthodox scene. Now, within the realm of Orthodox rabbis, so there's still a great range of what's an Orthodox rabbi. We know there are different hashkafot. The first thing we need is someone who knows halacha, someone who has the knowledge that we need. You're not going to choose a rabbi, someone who's learning in Machon Meir next to you, who put on a hat and decided he's a rabbi. I mean, there are guys who learn in Machon Meir. They walk in one year, they don't know anything. They walk out the next year and they decide they're a rabbi. They put on a hat and jacket, wear a turban or whatever it is, and they call themselves rabbi. Quite obviously, you're not going to choose someone like that to be a rabbi. So the first qualification is that the person should know halacha. Now, you might say, how do I know if someone knows halacha? So in this, I'm going to give you a formula which sounds complicated, but it isn't. Choose someone who you're confident knows halacha. If there's no one you're confident in other than Rav Eliashiv, so choose Rav Eliashiv. It's attainable to get to Rav Eliashiv. You don't need to choose Rav Eliashiv. Hopefully there are other people who you have confidence that they know halacha. But choose someone who you have confidence that person knows halacha. That person can be your rabbi if he answers to the other criterion. But if it's Rav Eliashiv, he cannot be your rabbi because he's not accessible. And one of our criterion is going to be that the person be accessible. Once you've chosen that person, get one meeting with that person. And in that meeting, summarize who you are and tell him you're looking for a rabbi who can help you and guide you. And ask him, who are your choices given where you live? Now that is going to give you your options of rabbis to choose from. You, yes?
Just one question, because whenever you talk to even other rabbis or even other people, someone say, you know, oh, I follow the Gra, I follow the Chafetz Chaim.
So that will get to.
That's a whole different situation. That's not a rabbi that's accessible. It's a rabbi who's, you know, the Gra is a long time ago. So, I always picture that if you had a rabbi, it would have to be some big rabbi.
Okay, so give me 1 second. And then I'll break down the direction I want us to go in short, and then we'll elaborate on each point. And we'll see if we cover that point. If we don't, remind me, and then we'll get back to that. So when we want to choose a rabbi, so we want to know what's within the realm of what's correct. So you go to someone who you know is correct and ask him to give you a list. Don't ask him, well, what about so-and-so? It's not very comfortable for a rabbi to say, well, I wouldn't go to him. That's something that you don't want to say. So instead of saying, what about so-and-so, come to him and tell him, who over here, who would you recommend in my neighborhood, in my vicinity, who answers my criterion, and in a second we'll talk about our criterion. Now, the question of datilu mir charedi, so if you're in doubt where to go with that, so hopefully you're going to find a rabbi who can help you with that question. Meaning, that's a big question, and you want a rabbi who's going to help you with that. If you're going to go to certain rabbis, you know you're going to get one answer. You go to other rabbis, you know you're going to get another answer. But there are many rabbis who are willing to think through with you what fits for you. And if you haven't found them, I could help you find them. Not every rabbi is necessarily on one side of the fence. It's true that there are many who seem like they are. But I could tell you quite a few Haredi Rabbanim who are willing to sit down and think with you what's good for you. And they'll seriously consider the Tilumi, and they'll work with you what's right for you. I could tell you quite a few the Tilumi Rabbanim are going to think with you about what's good for you, Haredi or the Tilumi, and they'll seriously consider Haredi. Not everyone is on one side of the fence. If that's a question that's concerning you, so there are many Rabbanim who will help you regardless which side of the fence you sit on. Rav Halberstam Zatzal was a Rav who I learned by. He was on the Eda Haredis, that's as Haredi as it gets. And I can tell you that not only I went to ask him Shilas, his guest room was filled with people with kippot sugot. Soldiers would come and ask him shaylos, and he answered each person according to where he was in life. So there are many rabbanim who will play. Yes, Eda Haredit is like Satmir. Not everyone in Satmir is what you think Satmir is. I could tell you the Satmar Rav in Mansi, Rav Deutsch. I used to learn in his Beis Medrash. And he also had many people who were friendly with him, who asked him shailas. I could tell you many Hasidish Rabbanim also. I don't see a point in enumerating names. There are many Rabbanim. If you can't find them, I'll help you find them. And this applies to our people online as well. If there are listeners who can't find them in their area, so you could give me a call and we'll try to work it out. Or you could send me an email. My email address is 653-6447@gmail.com. So whoever wants could send me an email. Okay, now what are our criteria? For those of you who are married, so the first criterion I always say is it should be a rabbi that your wife feels comfortable with this rabbi. Meaning most halachic shailas are going to affect your wife more than you. And again, I want to run through the criterion, and then we'll go in more depth to why each one. Two, a rabbi that can help you with minhag. If your minhagim are Dutch, so you need a rabbi who can help you with that, ideally. This isn't as important. It's preferable to have a rabbi who shares your background, meaning if you come from Uzbekistan and you could find a rabbi who comes from Uzbekistan as well, that is a tremendous asset. It's critical that you speak the same language. Don't think that because you went to Ulpan here, you could go to every Israeli rabbi. That's a mistake. It is critical that you have fluency in the same language. It is critical that it is a rabbi who has time, that you will be able to access him, he will give you the time to understand you and you'll understand him. Each of these points we'll go over with more depth. It's critical that he has knowledge, as we discussed earlier. It is very beneficial and almost critical that he understands where you're coming from and who you are and who your spouse is and where she's coming from. You should feel comfortable accepting what he says, and preferably you should be able to take his advice. In the end, we will discuss having multiple rabbis. There are situations where you cannot have only one rabbi, and we'll get to that in the end. Let's say a person is living in California, and he doesn't find a Datilumi rabbi. He feels like he learned the Machon Meir. He likes Machon Meir. The Ashkafa in Machon Meir is what he wants. But in California, the only rabbi who he feels comfortable asking halacha is a Haredi rabbi. So I say, go to the Haredi rabbi, and the Hashkafa you'll get from a rabbi, Machon Meir. That's not critical, it's not ideal, we'll deal with that in the end. Okay, so let's go back over our criterion and try to understand each step. The reason I stress that your wife should feel comfortable with the rabbi, the first reason is because you will find that most halachic questions affect your wife more than they affect you. Let's take an example. You ask a rabbi, can I mash eggs on Shabbos? Can I make scrambled eggs with mayonnaise on Shabbos? If the rabbi says no, who's going to make scrambled eggs on Friday or Thursday night? Well, maybe you're a good husband and you'll help. But the weight of doing that is on your wife. You ask a rabbi, am I allowed to open a can on Shabbos? Am I allowed to open a can of tuna, a can of pickles? Am I allowed to open it on Shabbos? The rabbi says no. Who's the one that has to figure out opening all the cans before Shabbos? What am I making on Shabbos? You ask a rabbi, can I put my food directly on the plata, or do I need a space with some vessel on it? Who's going to have to deal with that? Maybe you'll help, but it's your wife's. You ask a question in the laws of family purity. Most questions have more pertinence to the wife than the husband. The wife is the one that's at home. The wife is dealing with the shopping. The wife is dealing with the cooking. You ask which hechsherim are good. If he limits you with hechsherim, your wife, when she's doing the shopping, is going to be more limited. When she's planning the cooking, she's more limited. I hope you're going to be good husbands and you'll help with the cooking and you'll help with the shopping. But the weight of the rulings that the rabbi gives on most questions are more relevant to her than you. Right now you're in Machon Meir, you're living in a bubble. You don't have to deal with questions that pertain to the family. Your major questions are, when should I make the blessing of Am Netilas Yadayim in the morning? Before I go to the bathroom, after I go to the bathroom, before prayer, after prayer. After you get married, these questions are going to be small fry. You'll have to know them. But these aren't the big questions in life. There are going to be other questions which will affect your family as much more. And that's why I think that the rabbi that you choose has to be someone that your wife feels comfortable with the person. And I think that's critical when you're married. For those of you who are not yet married, so choose whoever's good for you. And when you'll get engaged, then you'll see if your kallah feels comfortable with that rabbi, good. And if not, then you'll start your quest again. That's a different story. Right now, you don't have to think, well, let me see what kind of wife I'll have. You guys know the joke about dating, right? The guy's about to go on his first date. So he goes to his friend and asks him, what do you talk about on a date? So he says, well, you talk about family, you talk about what you like, you talk philosophy. So he says, okay, fine. He goes out on the first date. He asks the girl, you have any siblings? You have a brother? She says, nope. Okay. So family's out of the picture. He says, do you like chocolate ice cream? You gotta talk about what you like. So she says, nope. So he says, okay, we covered family, what you like, what's left? Philosophy. So he tells her, gee, if you had a brother, do you think he would like chocolate ice cream? Okay. Over here, the same thing. You can't start thinking, if I had a wife, would she like this rabbi? You can't work it that way. That's like thinking, if you had a brother, would he like chocolate ice cream? So what you have to do is find a rabbi that matches your criterion at this point, and hopefully your wife will feel comfortable with it, and if not, you'll cross that bridge when you get there. Minhag. We know that it is prohibited to have mixed dancing at a wedding. I didn't say mixed sitting, I said mixed dancing. I didn't say dancing without a mechitza, I said mixed dancing. So that's prohibited. A guy comes and asks me, at my wedding, can I have mixed dancing? So I say, no. You don't have to ask me. But if you're asking me, then the halacha is you can't have mixed dancing. No. Don't have dancing, don't have music, but don't have mixed dancing. Now, you should have dancing, you should have music. But you can't have mixed dancing. There's no way to permit that. No. I can be very lenient on many other things, but what's prohibited is prohibited. There's nothing to talk about. I can't help you. Then the guy tells me, the country I come from, every wedding has mixed dancing. So I say, look, I don't know. You're telling me everyone does it. I what can I say? I don't know of any source to permit that. But I also don't know what to tell your family. If your family comes from a place where that's the norm, so how are you going to explain to them that by you it's not going to be that way? If all your guests are accustomed to this being the norm, so what are you going to tell them? If this is what your guests are used to, so what am I going to tell you? Bring handcuffs and handcuff all the mechitzas together and handcuff them to the wall? What are you going to do? So I told him, you need a rabbi who knows where you're coming from, knows life from your country, and can think with you what you do in your scenario. I can't help you. I never heard of a country where everyone has mixed dancing at their wedding. That's like telling you everyone serves shrimp at their wedding. Well, sorry, what can I say? It's not kosher, it's not kosher. Mixed dancing is not kosher. I can't help you. Let's find you a rabbi from your background who could understand where you're coming from and work with you as to what you're supposed to do in your scenario. That's an example of something which I couldn't have even anticipated. If you'd have told me in theory there exists such a country where this is what's the norm, I would have said can't be. But this guy is coming from that country and he's telling me that's the norm in the Orthodox community. What can I say? I don't know. I've never been there. But I can only tell him, let's find you a rabbi who knows your background, knows where you're coming from, and he'll work with you as to what you should do. Yeah, Yonatan.
Just so you know, from most opinions I heard from my friends in the state.
So this is where there's really an overlap on two things. Understanding your background, and that'll assist the rabbi in understanding you better, and understanding your minhag. And here we'll give an example about the wives as well. Standard practice among Moroccan wives is that you wake up in the morning, you wash the floors. You come back home in the afternoon, you wash the floors. And at night, before you go to sleep, you wash the floors again.
Why?
Now, yeah, Moroccan wives.
Oh my goodness. Why in the world do you do that?
Maybe I'm exaggerating a little. So, it's important, you guys are all laughing, because none of you are Moroccans. But if you were Moroccans, then if your wife didn't do it, you'd have an issue. What's wrong with her? She's bringing me in a filthy house. On the other hand, if you marry a Moroccan, then you ask yourself, you have nothing better to do with your time than scrubbing the floors three times a day. Now here's something which if you'll stay with your rabbi in Norway or in Finland or in Russia, and you call him up and you tell him this is what's going on, so he's not going to understand you. There are issues that really stem from where your background. This can involve minhagim. There are different customs for different places, and that's where it's halachic, where it's very beneficial to have a rabbi who comes from or has much experience with someone from your background. And it also has to do with simply understanding you. Where are you from?
Holland.
Do we have someone here from Finland? From Norway? Yeah. Norway. How do you say no in Norway?
No.
And yes?
Yeah.
I don't remember which country. I think it's Finland. That ya means no. There's a country. I don't remember which country. Somewhere around Norway.
Ne
means yes. Okay, so you're talking to a rabbi, and here in Israel, ne means no. In Greece, ne means yes. Okay, just imagine the conversation. Rabbi, can I drive a car on Shabbos? Ne. Okay, what did he just say? So you understand that there are going to be serious differences here. If he's Greek, he said yes. If he's Israeli, he said no. Okay, which one did he say?
So what to do?
Okay, it's a good question. I hope he's listening to this class, and he'll have to deal with it. So it's tremendously beneficial to have a rabbi that understands your minagim and your background and can help you with your minagim. Language. I'm going to say something here that I haven't said in all the years I'm in Mechon Meir, but I guess now it's come time to say it. Many of the people in this program are not native English speakers.
Yeah.
And I love everyone, Baruch Hashem. We have a great relationship. And we get along great, Baruch Hashem. And I have to tell you that those of you who do not, English isn't your native language, very often there are misunderstandings. I see it from the questions in the shiur. I see it from the questions after the shiur. And I see it from the quotes. Sometimes guys will tell me, you said. And I'll say, I didn't say that. And I'll say, no, you said. And I'll say, wait a second, I couldn't have said that. I don't remember what I did say, but that I didn't say. And this happens not once, not twice, about once or twice a week. So it stems from the fact that English is not the native language of every person present in this classroom. And I go home, and I don't want to say everybody, because then I'll insult everybody. So let's say not everybody. But if I say not everybody, then everyone's going to say, well, not me, everyone else. So I don't know what to answer you on that one, but let's just say almost everybody. You see? I don't remember specifics, but I'll be very surprised if there's anyone who's been through the Mechon in the last 2 years that it hasn't happened to. At least once. I'm telling you, it happens twice a week. On average, twice a week, I get questions or comments from guys who attended the class who English is not their native language, and it is quite evident from the question that there was a serious misunderstanding. I see it sometimes after shiur, guys come and ask questions, sometimes during shiur. But one of the things I pray all the time, I ask God, don't let there be an error in the class stemming from what I said or from how I'm understood. Because I can try to control what I say, which is difficult enough. I can try to gauge how people understand me, but I can't gauge how people misunderstand me. I don't know. And it's a tremendous, tremendous difficulty. And the problem is that people don't realize how much they don't understand. So I'm telling you, figure how many guys are in Mechon Meir in the English department, how many guys attend this class on average? 20 guys? 25 guys? Between the different guys that come in and out of the class? 25 guys. Figure I get two misunderstandings a week at least. That means every guy in this class has had at least four times during the year. At least. And I'm not talking about small misunderstandings, I'm talking about major misunderstandings. The guys don't complain because guys don't understand that they're not understanding. That's why I'm raising this issue. That's what I'm telling you. In all the years of Mechon Meir, I've never said this because I never want to offend anyone. But now it's relevant to you guys for the future. So I want you to know that. If English is not your native language, you shouldn't have a rabbi who speaks English if you can get a rabbi who speaks your native language. If you can't get a rabbi who speaks your native language, then you'll have to go with English. Don't think that just because you've gone to a pan here in Hebrew, you're going to be able to take a rabbi in Hebrew. The language that you speak best should be the language in which you find the rabbi, if it is at all possible. And again, I never said this before because I didn't want to offend anyone. But I'm telling you, if English isn't your native language, then there are tremendous misunderstandings going on in this classroom. Tremendous. I can't stress this enough. And for some reason, no one feels it. I see it from guys' reactions, that people don't sense it. That's why I have to spell it out. I know people are offended by what I'm saying now, and I'm sorry, I apologize, but I don't have a choice. I know. I know I offended everyone now.
Also, but they're not,
if I had a choice, I wouldn't say this. Believe me. But I don't have a choice. We're talking about your future. Time. Time is a scarce commodity. And it's not so simple to find a rabbi who has time to answer all of your questions. Sometimes it's worthwhile to compromise on his level of knowledge. Meaning, sometimes you say, my first choice of a rabbi would be someone who's chief rabbi of the city, or chief rabbi of the town, a person who's very, very busy. And maybe my major questions are posed to him. But being that I'm going to have a lot of simple questions, and I know he's hard to get a hold of, so I need a rabbi who's going to answer my day-to-day questions, and I'll take someone else's that rabbi. When I want to ask Rav Halberstam Zatzal a question, I'd have to get up at 5:30 in the morning, go to Minyan, travel all the way to Mea Shearim, put my name on a list. After I put my name on a list, wait for 2 hours till they open the doors to his office, wait for another 45 minutes in a hot office waiting room, and then hopefully get in. I could end up waiting 3 hours there. So you're talking about a 5-6 hour investment to get 5 minutes with him. It's a huge investment. So it's got to be worth your while. You got to be sure that the questions are worth the time. I wouldn't recommend anyone else do it on a permanent basis. You need a rabbi who you can access. Today, there are rabbis that carry cell phones. There are rabbis that you can access by their home phone. There are rabbis whose home phones are busy all the time. One of the reasons, there are many reasons why I recommend I not be your rabbi. One of them is because I'm hard to get a hold of. You need someone who you can get a hold of. By the time I get home, the phone is usually ringing off the hook. It's not a good idea. You don't want to sit there waiting on call waiting for 3 hours. I don't want you to sit there waiting on call waiting for 3 hours either. So you got to find someone who's accessible. So time is a major factor. And it also means someone who will have the time to hear you out, to understand where you're coming from, and to understand the different aspects of your question. And that's where we go on to understanding. Not every rabbi that knows halacha is going to be able to answer your question. A person who did tshuva is a person who's growing. And the answer to a question is not a formula. If you'll ask me a question and you'll tell me that you've been Orthodox your whole life, then I'll answer you one way. And if you ask me a question and you tell me you just came to Machon Meir 2 days ago, I'll answer you a different way. And if you tell me you just graduated from Machon Meir, you just left Machon Meir 2 days ago, I'll also answer you a different way. An answer has to be modified to the person who's asking it and his situation in life. And you need a rabbi who can understand you and your spouse and your situation in life. We began by discussing that Orthodoxy does not adopt the liberties of changing our tradition. At the same time, halacha is dynamic. And this brings us to the next point. Sometimes a person can learn halacha and say, okay, I understand. Very good. Sometimes a person can learn halacha and say, I don't understand. Excellent. Sometimes a person can learn halacha and say, I understand, but I don't feel ready to keep. Legitimate. We're growing. We have to discern between that and saying, I learned and I disagree. That's a mistake. One of the things we have to have when we approach learning halacha is a certain level of modesty. A person can learn something and say, that doesn't make sense. What he said is, I know what's right, and that text is wrong. It doesn't make sense. We train ourselves to say, that doesn't make sense to me. I don't understand it. Not to place fault in the text, but to understand that I am limited. I'm starting out. Even if I'm not starting out, throughout my life I'm going to be limited. Sometimes a person can find a rabbi that it's fitting for him. But then the rabbi tells him something and he says, but I don't agree. Or I learned differently. Or I know better. Well, if a person is going to approach a rabbi with that attitude, he won't find a rabbi. Hopefully you'll find a rabbi that can hear you out and work with you. And the rabbi who's going to have the understanding to tell you, are you ready for this? Maybe you're not ready for it. Or a rabbi who you'll feel comfortable enough telling him, I learned this halacha, but I don't feel like I'm ready to keep it. I know I should, I know I'm going to get there, but I'm not ready yet. a person learns that, let's say, his rabbi holds that he's not supposed to comb his hair on Shabbos. So, there are opinions that say, if you take a comb, it's not going to tear any hair, there's no problem combing your hair on Shabbos. But let's say, for whatever reason, he went to a shir and his rabbi said, you're not allowed to comb your hair on Shabbos. And this guy says, what do you mean? I'm supposed to walk out of the house without combing my hair? So he could tell his rabbi, look, 2 weeks ago or 2 years ago, I didn't keep Shabbos at all. I'm keeping the basics of Shabbos, and I feel like this is too tough for me. I'm not yet ready for it. I'll get there. So a person should feel comfortable enough saying that to his rabbi. But a person should not say, well, because he told me that, X, he's not my rabbi. Because if we're going to work that way, what we're saying is that the halacha has to match where I'm holding today. Halacha isn't that way. Halacha is understanding. That doesn't make what's wrong right. It might mean that what's right for me right now is a certain thing. That doesn't mean it is right in a purely logistic fashion. The halacha takes into account the individual circumstance. When a guy does tshuva, when a guy does gir, we don't expect him the first day to know all the halachas and keep all the halachas as though he's been keeping it for 100 years. Obviously this is a new lifestyle. A person shouldn't be turned off by the fact that there are halachas that seem big for him, that seem difficult for him. There are halachas that are difficult. And that's not a reason to turn away from a rabbi or turn away from keeping them or look for a rabbi who's going to say that what's prohibited is permitted. That's not a way in life. You got to look for a rabbi who's honest, who's right, who's going to tell you the true halacha. Hopefully you're also going to find a rabbi, and this goes to the issue of understanding, who's going to work with you where you're holding in life. So if you tell your rabbi, look, I understand the halacha is I'm not allowed to have mixed dancing at my wedding, but I can't look my friends in the eye and I can't make fights with my family. I'm not holding by doing that yet. I can't do that. The rabbi might tell you, look, I don't see how I could attend a wedding that you're going to do it. I feel very bad. I always dreamt I'd be at your wedding and I don't see how I could attend because this is against halacha, but I also understand you. Meaning, there are two fronts here. There's a level where we say, you have to understand, this isn't correct halachically, but I also understand that you're not yet holding by keeping this halacha. I understand that. But there's a marked difference between saying that and saying, well, I don't agree. Or the halacha isn't that. Let me find the rabbi that says this is permitted. That, I think, is incorrect. If you found a rabbi that you know knows halacha, so sometimes you could say, look, I want to have mixed seating at my wedding. And I heard in this lesson, I heard that Rabbi Feinstein permits mixed seating at a wedding. So I understand, you could tell your rabbi, I understand that the rabbi has a tradition that this is prohibited, but I learned in Machon Mirai, a rabbi who told me once, that it's permitted to have, that Rabbi Feinstein held it's permitted to have mixed seating at a wedding. So, I would like to go with that opinion at my wedding. I did it at my wedding. We had a section with mixed seating. And I had rabbis who were friends of mine who wouldn't attend my wedding. Very good friends of mine. I grew up with them. They were really close friends of mine. But their father was a prominent rabbi, held it's prohibited to have mixed seating at a wedding. And they weren't willing to go against their father. So they told me, we respect you, we value you, we love you, we wish you well, we're not going to attend the wedding. So I said, fine, you know what, I'm not going to do something if it's permitted halachically, and I have guests who it's important to them, so I don't see a reason not to go with it. So I went with that leniency, and I paid a price. One of my best friends wasn't at my wedding because he felt he couldn't attend the wedding where this improper thing was being done. I have a tradition from my rabbeim that it is proper, that it is permitted. I'm not saying I should be your rabbi. I began by saying I shouldn't be your rabbi. But I'm just saying it is possible to speak to your rabbi about other opinions. And hopefully he'll tell you, fine, if this is what your rabbi Machon Meir said, or if you have some other reasonable rabbi who you're relying on, so you don't have to go with my ruling on this. There are many rabbis who are going to go along with you on that, and will even try to find for you an opinion that will work for you. But the main point that I'm going back to here is, don't think that just because he said something that you feel incapable of doing right now, that means that he's wrong or he cannot be your rabbi. Talk to him about it. Tell him, look, I understand this is the halacha. A guy calls me up and says, you know, my wife has boyfriends. And halachically she shouldn't have boyfriends, but she still has boyfriends. So I asked him, what does she want to know? Meaning, I can tell you the halacha, but if she's not going to listen anyways, so is she interested in hearing what the halacha says? What does she want to... You're asking the question, but is she asking the question? Or are you using this as a way to twist her arm? To come back and say, take them all off your Facebook, take them all off your Gmail, no more boyfriends. It would probably be beneficial to their marriage, but at the same time, to use halacha as your crowbar, come waving it and say, you see, this is the halacha. Well, it's not so simple. So there's halacha, but there's also understanding where a person's holding in life. I hope you'll find a rabbi who can work with you in understanding where you are in life. And this takes a rabbi who has time. Meaning it's not just knowledge of halacha, but it's time and understanding where you're holding, and hopefully a rabbi that has experience with people who do tshuva. One of the rabbis who I ask my questions to, very often when guys come to me with questions, I'll call him up and I'll ask him what he says about it. And he'll tell me, well, you know that here and here it says it's prohibited. I'll tell him, yes, I know that, but I called you to find out if there's room to be lenient. I called you to find out, for the guys at Machon Meir, I need a leniency. I need to know if there's how lenient can I be for the guys. And his answer to me almost always, his answer is, I don't have experience dealing with people who do tshuva. Call so-and-so or call so-and-so. He doesn't want to answer. He tells me, look, this needs someone who has experience dealing with people in this situation. So, by the same token, I hope you'll find someone who has experience with where you're holding. We have a few topics to cover still in this topic, and the question is if you guys have koach. We have the question of advice versus halacha, meaning speaking to a rabbi about halachic issues, and then there's taking counsel with a rabbi. These are two different areas. We have the question of juggling more than one rabbi, meaning you have a rabbi here and you have a rabbi who you might call back in your hometown, etc. And we have the question of when does one have to listen to a rabbi. So these are the three topics that I'd like to still cover here. We could continue now if you guys have koach, or we could leave it for next time. What's the vote?
I really would like to continue, but I really also would like to get some water.
Oh, so go get a cup of water. You have koach?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay. Do you want to take a 2-minute break? Everyone will get a cup of water?
Yeah.
Okay.